Today's May 23rd, 2021. You know, John had to write the date in for me because I can't remember the date. And he had written in the wrong date and really messed me up, but he didn't.
If I had said it was March 23rd, you would have felt that was a little strange. So I can't have it. Yeah, I can't have a lot of variability in it. But it is actually May 23rd today as we record this.
Yeah. Mobile Views Podcast 364. And we were going to dedicate this to the Google I/O announcements. But I'm laughing because John and I were just talking about it before the podcast. And we said, was there anything there? Was there any there? And there wasn't much there, but we'll get to that. Okay, so I'm Todd Agasawa, our good friend John Osol, blah blah blah. You know the roll call.
You probably know who we are.
Yeah. So my engraved, yeah, I know it's special. Engraved Apple AirTags came in a couple of days ago, and I tried one out. I bought a 4-pack and I tested it out, and you know it's not as sensitive in the house, at least, as I thought it would be. I might need to go into wild, you know, and just maybe like hide it under a tree or something and walk away and see if other people's devices, iOS devices, actually helps me find something. That said, once you get fairly close to an object, like 15, 16 feet from it, it starts saying, hey, I've got a weak signal. And then shortly thereafter, it starts giving you directions that are pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. And then if you look in your Find My app, which, you know, can find your regular iOS devices already. That's you don't need to put an AirTag on your iOS device unless you want to. Under there's people, devices, and, you know, your friends are people. And devices are your iOS and macOS devices. And the device and items. There's a new thing called items, and you can name your items. I put it on my backpack, so I named it very cleverly backpack. And it shows that it says it's with me now. It's about 12 feet away, so that's true.
So I guess the question is, how often have you lost your backpack in the past?
You know, I can't say I have, but I have forgotten it once. Okay, it wasn't lost. I walked out of my office, and I said, "Boy, I feel really." You know, light and strong today. And that's because I forgot my backpack in the office. And that was actually kind of a problem. I mean, I knew where I left it. You know, it was a problem because to get into my office, you need a key card. And I think I left my key card in my backpack.
Yeah, that would do it.
And fortunately, although it was end of the day, somebody was still there. And I was able to kind of telephone in and say, hey, I forgot my backpack, my key cards, and can I, you know, open the door? But no, I need to find something that I am more likely to misplace than my backpack. You're right. I haven't quite thought of it. Also, you know, keeping in mind that it does have a finite life. It has a 2032 coin battery in it, so it lasts, I don't know, a year, depending on how much you play with it. You know, mm-hmm. if you sound the buzzer on it, has a piezoelectric buzzer, I'm sure you'll kill that thing pretty fast. So for people playing with it now, it probably won't last you. And the piezoelectric buzzer is loud enough in a quiet environment like a home. I'm not sure you could hear it if you were, you know, outside in the wind or something. But it's interesting. I never did really use the Tile or anything. So this is my first time using one of these tracking devices. Anyway, next Apple item is, as John knows, I am the casualist of casual gamers. And so even my Xbox really just sat there doing much of nothing for the last 15 years, however old it is now. But I do like casual games. The ultimate casual game, in my opinion, appeared in Apple Arcade a couple of weeks ago. It's called Solitaire Plus. And, you know, people who use Windows in days... Solitaire is no longer on Windows, by the way. It doesn't ship with Windows. You can download it from the store. But you may remember that Solitaire used to come with Windows, with the alleged usefulness, productivity use of teaching you how to use a mouse, back when the mouse was a new thing. And the amazing thing about it is Solitaire has always been fun to me. I mean, you know, just playing a pack of cards, playing the old Solitaire game on a computer is always fun, as simple as it is. So Solitaire Plus for Apple Arcade is part of Apple Arcade. But the thing that I found interesting is the developer, whose name is MobilityWare, managed to gamify in a game that's already fun. And so there's a speed component, like how fast did you actually, you know, clear the deck? And the speed component is somehow tied to other factors in the game, and it comes with a score. So it rank orders your game, your completed games. So it's, and there are levels, and I'm not sure what the levels even mean. I've gone through a couple of levels, but it is a lot more fun than I expected. And I've been playing it every day since I discovered it probably a week ago. So Solitaire Plus, if you've got Apple Arcade, you just download it and use it. It's a gamified game. What can I say? Fun. Okay, now what wasn't fun? Google I.O. Now, Google I.O. is a dev conference. So it is not meant to be a, you know, announce slick new things for consumers. Sort of like Apple's WWDC. That's not the intent of the conference.
But yeah, WWDC, I think, is what's gotten Google and others to think of I.O. and dev conferences as where you announce the cool software stuff for the year. And that is a weird shift. I think those announcements used to always come paired with hardware before WWDC got really big in the last 10 years. So it's sort of common, I think, now that we think that I.O. should have some really cool stuff in it that end users would find interesting.
Yeah.
But this year it just didn't seem to have a lot of end user ready stuff to tease.
Yeah. You know, I know you and I both looked through the list of announcements in various websites or, you know, blogs, whatever. The most interesting thing to me was Wear OS, which apparently Google, Samsung, and Fitbit, and Google bought Fitbit, so Fitbit's part of Google, is getting together on. And my note to myself is I would have said it's too little too late, except for the fact that Google bought Fitbit. And I like Fitbit a lot. I'm wearing a Fitbit right now. So I'm looking forward to it. I hope I don't have to buy a new device, which I suspect I will. I can't imagine they can upgrade the firmware from whatever Fitbit's proprietary OS is to Wear OS. So if it's not too expensive, I can see myself changing to a Fitbit running Wear OS in sometime in the future. I'm going to guess not this year. Who knows? They didn't announce
devices. It'll be interesting to me to see if Fitbit becomes software as service versus the hardware. You know, and all of a sudden, anything that's a Wear OS device can record to Fitbit. If it has the right hardware components, and why produce dedicated Fitbits then? I could see Samsung producing and the other Wear OS partners producing devices that you can use your Fitbit data with. And Fitbit becomes akin to Apple Fitness or akin to Apple Activity Tracking. Yeah. Just Google's activity and fitness tracking platform.
And, you know, now that you mention it, I didn't think of that. And now that you mention it, you know, I wonder if Fitbit is going to become the next Motorola. You might recall Google also bought Motorola a number of years ago. And one of the things it produced was the Moto 360, which I liked a lot. I wore the Moto 360 for a number of years until it finally broke. And then I broke down and bought an Apple Watch. But yeah, that's an interesting thought. Will Fitbit become just software? It's too bad because they make awfully good hardware. You know, it's so good that I wear a Fitbit and an Apple Watch because I think the Fitbit does some things better. Like, you know,
aside from some issues I've seen with, you know, wear over time of some physical components. My wife has a Fitbit that we've had to fix the where the bands snap in because if soap residue gets in there, you have to dig it out. And I've had to take the little springs out and clean them and put them back in. And that's a little annoying. I've never had to deal with it with an Apple Watch. But other than that, the hardware has been working. I think we did have to do a warranty return on it about a year after she'd gotten it. The original one died. But otherwise, fairly reliable stuff hardware-wise from Fitbit.
Yeah, I've been using Fitbit since the original Fitbit, which is, I think, just called the Fitbit, back in 2010. So it's over a decade now. So it's, you know, I've been using it continuously over... Or the service, I should say, now that you mentioned the service, you know, software as a service kind of thing. I've been using its tracking service for well over a decade now. I you know, one thing they don't show anymore, unless you really go digging, is the total number of steps since the beginning of, you know, your time. And I know I passed 10 million steps a number of years ago. I don't know where I am now. Okay. The other one I found kind of interesting was Starline 3D, which is their kind of virtual... It's video conferencing with kind of a virtual presence aspect. But I can't get too excited about it because Google is always so terrible at comm services that I don't expect this to A, go anywhere, or B, stay if it, you know, reaches fruition. I don't know. How did you? I mean, we've seen this so many times before. Cisco and, you know, everybody's tried it, right?
Google announces so many video-related services on a regular basis that I just don't try to keep up with them anymore. You know, one of the other things that they announce is that Google Meet is going to be expanding access and, you know, a number of enhancements for the work-at-home crowd and things like that. And that's nice, but I believe Google video stuff when I actually see it released, because so much of it just gets discussed and then they end up releasing three different products at a time that all do the same thing, and you're wondering which one's going to take off and which one they're going to kill. And I don't think Google's ever quite figured out, with the exception of YouTube, how to do video.
True. And somebody else figured that out for them.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, speaking of Google Meet, I think that's the thing that I found semi-interesting. I believe they're integrating Google Meet into the Google, what is it called? Google Apps, whatever they call the enterprise thing, you know, where you buy it for your group. And you can initiate like a Google Meet directly from Google Docs or Google Sheets or whatever and collaborate with something. So that's kind of interesting, but, you know, and I just realized I do have a Google Enterprise. Oh, that's what it's called, Google Enterprise account. I do have a Google Enterprise account, but I don't think I use it for anything except one very vertical thing we're working on. So, And then you note something that's kind of I think we both decide is kind of meh, but worth noting.
Yeah, the only thing that as an end user I would look at and go, I want that tomorrow, is being able to use with Android 12, being able to use your phone as a TV remote, very similar to how iPhones can use as an Apple TV remote, or use the on either platform. You can download the remote for I'm blanking on the service name, the place where Rocco works,
Roku.
Roku, yeah, you can download the Roku remote on anything as well. And using NFC as a car key functionality, it's coming to Android, but of course. Apple announced that last year at WWDC. But as an end user, that's where I would have really gone, oh, that's a cool feature I want. Yeah, it's cool that you can make your background photo on Android and then the operating system figures out the dominant colors and changes the other system colors so that they match. And that's nice. And it's nice that Google Photo will start noticing features and more pattern matching and things. Yeah, that's nice, but it's right. Not something that I would, I want an Android 12 device or a new Pixel device.
And right when they start charging for Google Photos. So, you know, that's enticement for you to pay for storage. I should note, you know, I haven't figured out how this actually works. So, I read that if you have a Pixel phone, and it the word have is the key word here. If you have a Pixel phone, and I have a 4A, you can still have unlimited photos. But what I don't know is, A, what does the word have mean? So, for example, because I didn't want to lose Google Voice, and this is before I think they fixed it, I have two separate Google accounts. One is one for Google Voice, which I still use for text messages and stuff, for people who know me from, you know, that number back when I was too cheap to pay for text messaging on my phone and before it became unlimited with most plans. And so I don't know what, you know, so I don't know if it's attached to my account that I bought my Pixel with, which is a different account name, or if it's attached to, you know, any account on a Pixel phone, because I have both accounts registered on this same phone, so I can switch profiles back and forth, and it has different backup profiles and so. I don't know what the word have means, and so two, I don't know if it what I mean is if I have a Pixel 4, and let's define it as whatever accounts on here associated with it. If I associate that account with another device, like an iPhone, will photos from that also be uploaded unlimited? So those are the kinds of things I don't know. And I guess we'll find out in less than 10 days, because come June 1, the unlimited upload feature goes away. I should note, if you've already uploaded photos, all of those stay, so you won't have to pay for those, or at least pay extra for those. So that's not an issue. It's just photos you start adding after it will be charged against your storage quota. And then last week we talked about how their tiers are now a little bit better and more affordable, or slightly more. There you go. All right. Okay. John's got a lot to say, so I'm going to listen.
Well, yeah, I have a few things. We were talking about fitness tracking, and probably because I have used my Apple Watch quite a bit over the last year, and I actually uploaded an image for Todd that shows everything. Since May 28th of last year, I've gone nearly 4 million steps and almost 2,000 miles if you count walking and running, and 511 total workouts, and just a ton of time. I think I calculated out that the number of hours, it's about 4% of my year last year was spent exercising in the last 12 months. Wow. And so my Apple Watch has been with me on all of that. And so this week when Apple announced a series of enhancements to accessibility features on the watch and iPad and iOS, Apple's assistive touch on Apple Watch looks really interesting. It also looks like exactly what the Mudra band that we've talked about a couple times was seeking to do. Ironically, a day after the announcement, Mudra sent out a survey to me asking for sizing information and everything else. So I think they're about ready to go into full order fulfillment. But they may be a little bit too late if assistive touch comes out before they're able to roll out. For those of you that didn't see the video on this, assistive touch is one-handed control for the Apple Watch. It's specifically the hand that your watch is on the wrist of. And so using actions like clenching and moving your wrist and tapping your fingers together, you can navigate the Apple Watch interface without having to use your other hand. So ostensibly, this is really useful for people who don't have another hand. If you are missing a limb, this is the accessibility feature for you. But there are plenty of times that people have noted in the last number of years that you want to be able to use your Apple Watch one-handed or one-armed. Most of the time, this is accomplished using the tip of one's nose, as many people point out. And every Apple Watch user, it's kind of their dirty little secret. Yeah, occasionally I tap my screen with my nose to get that to work. But this would allow you to do that without having to use your nose. This would allow you to use just the hand that your watch is attached to. And they announced a number of other accessibility features there, including the ability to use eye tracking with a third-party peripheral with the iPad to control the operating system, which sounds really cool. Sounds like those of us that have full use of our limbs could use that to be lazy if we really wanted to by just glancing at certain things and using eye tracking control.
I think that's awesome, by the way.
But yeah. There's some really cool things. It's just funny to me that I think Apple put more out in one press release on accessibility that is actually interesting to me as an end user, not as a developer, than Google I.O. put out for end users. Now, for developers, either way, developer thinking, I like what Google did at I.O. because it's cool to see what's coming in the operating systems. But end users, man, that one idea that I could use the same hand to clench and tap and all that, that's a pretty cool feature for Apple Watch if it works as well as the video appears to show.
I just want to chime in that while you were talking about these things, I logged into my Fitbit account on my website because it doesn't show it on your app. And I don't know when I started. I want to say 2010 or 2009, somewhere around there. But anyway, my lifetime steps is 44,333,777 steps, which I think is a really interesting number. And in fact, I'm gonna screen cap it right now before I forget and take a step and, all right,
I've got throw that screen it all. Cap. Up.
Yeah, I throw it all. It's not a fun number. 44,333,777. Anyway, and let's see. That translates to what is it? Oh shoot! I thought I had miles, and I'm trying to find. There it is. So lifetime distance, 20,028.96 miles. So I'm gonna screen cap that too. And I should note, that during the
It's interesting because if you figure that's over 10 years, 11 years, and you figure mine is a screen cap of the last year. Yeah. In the last year, I just started walking as much as you've done for your commutes on average every year for the last 10 years. Because my numbers are all around one-tenth of your numbers.
That's funny. And 41,458 lifetime floors. I'm going to capture that too. And as you get older, the word lifetime becomes much more meaningful. what else have we got here? I think those are the only things it has that are like lifetime, anything. Yeah, Yeah, that's the only thing there is a lifetime. Still fun. So, yep, 44,330,777. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. So I'm really excited about this assistive touch thing too. And even more maybe eye tracking. I think that's even more interesting in some way.
The eye tracking, if they can figure out how to do it without a peripheral, that would be really cool.
And yeah.
Presumably at some point, Apple's cameras will get good enough that it can be done without a tool. So.
And you know, if they put like, would you need two or three cameras? If you put stereo front-facing cameras, could be possible. You know, kind of a reverse parallax calculation. But at any rate.
In research now, there are libraries that use a standard webcam to do eye tracking.
Hmm.
So it is, the webcams are getting good enough to do this. I've actually been exploring it with some colleagues that are into process tracing research, and we've been looking at some of the solutions out there that can already grab it just from even my 10-year-old webcam on my Apple Cinema display is high res enough to track my eyes. So,
is that what you're using now, by the way? No, that's not what you're using now. Is it?
Yeah.
You look good. I mean, I would not have guessed it's a 10-year-old camera.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the image is great. Image quality is great. Okay. And I still haven't bought a new iPad. I'm still waiting for an announcement of iPad Mini 6 or iPad Mini Pro or iPad Mini something. Okay. Now, I'm very interested in your next topic because I know you've thought a lot about it.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about photo storage over the last couple months, especially because of Google Photos changing how they do things.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me thinking about total backup strategy. And this last week, I had a couple issues with my backup systems. A misconfigured firewall led to me wondering if one of my pieces of equipment was down, or it was just that I didn't have the right firewall network open. So I figured that out. It was a nice potential hours-long fix that was fixed in 20 minutes.
Oh, good.
But this made me think about our backup strategies in general. And, you know, for a number of years, these change. You know, sometimes I've tried cloud backup. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I've done local. And I thought it'd be interesting just to hear what you're doing, and I could give people kind of what I've been doing. Because, you know, Google Photos is great for ease of access backup, but it doesn't keep the actual high-res version if you keep it with just the high-quality setting. And I like to keep the high-res version of my original photos. So basically, my backup plan in a nutshell is that all of my working files are stored in OneDrive or iCloud Drive on my MacBook. So if the MacBook gets run over by a truck, all the files that I need are backed up to the cloud somewhere. I have a network-attached storage unit from QNAP that I've mentioned a couple times. QNAP has been rather unceremoniously dragged through the mud over the last couple of months because of some high profile security issues they've had with ransomware and things like that. So if you have a QNAP, you need to be sure that you have it well protected. Do not expose it to the internet. If possible, don't, you know, VPN into your home network. Don't have any port directly mapping to it. But my QNAP at home it's got about a 12 gigabyte or 12 terabyte capacity on it. It's running RAID 5 striped array, so if one of the drives goes, I have a spare drive sitting over here that I can pop in and rebuild the array, which did happen one time in the last 4 years that I've owned it. I had a drive die, and it backs up to another QNAP at an offsite that is not RAID 5 or even RAID at all. It's just literally a bundle of stuff. And I just had a cat jump on me, so our show notes are now getting cat writing in them. But anyway, so we've got, and I also have 5 external hard drives at home that I occasionally decide to pull out, and I have sync jobs that will synchronize the network attached storage to those 5 external drives. That's kind of my snapshot backup. And other than that, I have an old MacBook Pro that used to be my daily driver. It's now my hot spare. So I take it out about once every month or two back, you know, let it do its updates. I actually have a piece of software on there that can take full image backups with my iPhone and iPad. So I do that just so I have
that's a good idea.
Snapshot of those two devices other than iCloud backup. Yeah, and it also lets you unpack and look through those backups. So sometimes there's a data that's only stored on device, and this would let you get to it, things like health kit data and such.
Yeah.
And then lastly, I have the QNAP app on my phone backs up the original photos on my phone to the network attached storage, so I don't have to worry about the quality. And on my my keys, I have a 64 gig Swiss Army USB that we've talked about.
Yes.
That really just has my medical insurance information and in case of emergency information. So if I'm in, there's a big folder on there that says in case of emergency, read here. And it's got contact information for family and medical insurance information, all that.
That's a good
and idea. Then, you know, an emergency kit in case I'm away from home and I need to get into my home VPN. It's got a client certificate that I could change if I need if I lose the USB drive. It's got a SSH key that I can use with a passphrase on it so that if I need to get into a server, I can do that from anywhere. But otherwise... that's kind of everything I do.
I you know, this is a little bit off topic, but since you mentioned, you know, your thumb drive and losing it, if we had AirTag attached to it with Thermite, that could be remotely detonated.
That's true.
I mean, I'm not talking explosion. I'm talking to poof, you know, and, you know, take out your USB thumb drive and, you know, you're secure again.
I mean, I can also just revoke the key, so that's, you know.
But
that's not
is it as much fun? No, 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 I mean,
no,
you know.
It is not.
Okay, so Apple, next edition, next year, 2022, Apple AirTags with Thermite. That's what we're waiting for.
The explosive edition of Apple AirTags.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that. Yeah, it'd be like, you know, well, for those people old enough who've seen Mission Impossible, you know, this recording will self-destruct in 10 seconds, you know, that kind of thing. All right. So it's interesting. And I have had a very complex backup scheme. I had a very complex backup scheme for years. John is showing me a cat. That's why I'm laughing. And the cat is like, what? What?
Yeah, the cat's like, why are you so upset with me, you know, jumping on you?
And for years, you know, pre-cloud solutions, I backed it up to a couple of external drives, internal drive, and I would burn it to a DVD and take it to my parents' house and, you know, all those kind of things, right?
Very bury it in the backyard and...
Yeah, you know. With Thermite.
Yeah.
So once Google Photos became a thing, and this was a number of years ago, I remember I only had, I think, one... Was it three? I think I had like 3 megabits upload speed at the time. And I uploaded all, you know, however many 100,000 files of video clips plus photos I'd taken over a lifetime. Some of it scanned up to Google Photos. And then once John convinced me I should pay for extra storage on iCloud, which I did. This is before Apple One. I did that and I started backing up all my photos with theirs. I had 2 cloud backups. And now I have 3 because, you know, well, I've always paid for OneDrive. I've just never backed up to it because it was just such a terrible backup process. It was slow and clunky, and sometimes it didn't work. And so I left it unused for years, at least in that sense. Oh, I just saw the cat jump away. Good jumper.
Yep.
And so now I have 3 cloud storage devices. Oh, I didn't realize he had 2 cats. Okay, anyway.
Yeah.
I got distracted. Yeah, so anyway, so I've got a bunch of things now. I don't back up to a hard drive anymore at home, which is weird, which is what you do, and I should. I used to back up my phones. You know, I used to plug it in and back up all the files every time I changed the phone, which was, you know, every 2 years. My problem now is, now that I think about it, you know, the iCloud only backs up my iOS devices. It doesn't back up my Android device.
Mm-hmm.
Nor do I manually back up the very few digital camera photos I take these days. And I don't take many, but I take a few. And so I need to go rethink that. I need to rethink my whole backup scheme, to be honest. Because there's, you know, multiple sources, multiple targets. And of course, with Google changing it, you know, to charge, you know, I have to figure out how much I'm willing to pay per year. And right now it's reasonable. It's very reasonable. I pay $20 a year, so that's not... I do have a NAS... like device. It's basically on my home router, a USB plug-in that I used to use, and it still plugged in, probably still spinning. I haven't checked it in I don't know how long. I should go check if the hard drive's still alive and running. And unlike you, I use my MacBook about once a week. I mean, in addition to doing the podcast, I use it for other things too. So I take out my MacBook every now and then, especially the MacBook Air, the M1 MacBook Air, which is awesome. That's interesting. So, my photos are still going to three places. I do not have a Swiss Army knife with a USB device. Interesting thought. I need to think about how I want to do my portable thing. I used to have like a keychain USB, a very tiny USB thumb drive that I got from Costco. It's like the bare minimum of the chip enclosed by a little piece, tiny piece of plastic that you can put on a keychain. About 1/4 the size of a conventional thumb drive. But that's about it. I really need to rethink it. And I also, as you get older, one of the things you need to think about is what happens after you die? How can people get access to your stuff? Google has a trusted partner thing. You can assign somebody who has access to all your stuff. But in general, how do people get to your stuff that you want them to get to, like photos and so forth? Especially for time-sensitive items. By that, I mean, if you pay an annual subscription and your credit card dies along with you and your subscription stops being paid for, what happens to everything once you go? So, those are things I still really haven't thought through, and that might be worth an article, writing it down and posting it up somewhere for other folks to maybe not benefit from, but let them think about it to figure out their own digital afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have kind of a solution in place for that. I do have a document that is kind of morbid to think about, but it's in case I die document that's got, at least the starting points to the things that my family would need in order to check out what was going on and get into my devices and all of those things. But it's part of the digital will, I suppose, that we're going to all need to have, or you've got a real will for your real world assets and then a digital version for how people are going to get access to those things.
Yeah, I'm going to make a note of that in our show notes because it's something we probably don't think about much. Digital afterlife, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. you might remember the old Second Life. You remember Second Life? I don't know what happened to it.
Yeah.
But this is afterlife.
Yeah.
What happens to your digital stuff? It's an interesting question, and it's I know a lot of people have already faced it. I remember reading years ago about people who wanted to unlock their loved one's email account after they passed, but there are various rules in place and why they couldn't, and all of that stuff. So yeah, we should do a show on that. We should do a really morbid show and talk about all that stuff. I'm not sure who's an expert on it. Do we have any friends who's an expert in this kind of thing? I'll have to think about it. Perhaps one of our friends who's also an attorney, but in any case. That is all I've got. Google I.O. was a bust, so not much to talk about from it. As John pointed out, Apple's one announcement had more interesting stuff than all of 3 days of Google I.O., so that was kind of a disappointment. I have not ordered anything new. I'm kind of looking around. Nope, I've not ordered anything of any particular interest, I think, to anybody, except for my Apple AirTags, which... I'm still kind of interested, not kind of interested. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what the use case is. I bought it because it's Apple, to be honest, and because it sounded like it would fit better than the way I do stuff than Tile. But other than that, I'm just kind of looking through stuff I've bought recently. Nope, nothing. Lots of pet food. Yeah, Sugru. We can do a show on Sugru someday. And I still haven't played with my Osmo, which I bought after being influenced by John, my personal digital influencer. So that is it. That is Mobile Views Podcast 364. We'll be coming up to 365 at some point in the near future. And I still haven't invited more friends to get, to get reconnected with. I have neglected that, but we'll do so soon.
All right,
folks. That's it.